on DAB Digital Radio, Digital TV, downloads and online.
This is 5 Live.
Okay, High Time, box office top 10 came along. Sunshine Cleaning at 10.
I like it more than I like Little Miss Sunshine, even though it's from the producers of the same thing. It stars Alan Arkin in avuncular mode, who I could have lived without, but he will be appearing again in another movie this week, in a movie in which somebody actually says, I really like him, he's so avuncular.
Terminator Salvation at 9.
On the way out, and good riddance to
Night at the Museum 2 at 8.
On the way out, and good riddance to it.
Now, Kabakht Ishq. Is how I'm pronouncing it. I may well be wrong, particularly on that last name. But Tricia in Twickenham says, Dear Soggy Bottom Boys, in case the good doctor has not yet had the opportunity to visit his local Bollywood screen, can I save him much pain by earnestly recommending he avoid Kabakht Ishq? Supposedly a battle of the sexes comedy, i.e. women get slapped a lot. It is an unpleasant mess made up of a weak plot, weaker script, charmless performances by usually reliable leads, nauseating Hollywood cameos, and entirely forgettable music. 2 out of 10, because there is one genuinely funny moment in it, and at least the cinematographer made an effort. But on the whole, must try harder, much, much harder.
Well, thank you for that. That will have saved me several hours of pain.
Kabakht Ishq, year one's at 6.
Which, you know, I wish it was funnier, because I do think that Michael Cera and Jack Black are essentially funny people, but I just didn't laugh enough. And I said the greatest indictment of it was, and this was backed up by the fact that James King himself said this on Radio 1, there was a point in it when James King was so bored he decided to go to the toilet, and in order to do so he had to wake me up so that he could climb over me on the way out.
So actually you were asleep for an awful lot of it, so while you were asleep a lot of it could have been very funny.
No, I was asleep for about 2 minutes.
Could have been the best bit. Could have been comedy classic.
No,
unlikely.
I don't think so. I mean, put it this way. We were in the same scene when I woke up, but had it not been for James, I could probably happily have slept through until the end.
My Sister's Keeper at 5.
Yeah, which, as we said before, Cameron Diaz, light romantic comedy. That's her métier. She should stay in it.
The Hangover's at 4. James in London. I stupidly allowed myself to be dragged to see The Hangover this week. I only have myself to blame. I may have smiled a couple of times, but otherwise spent most of the time looking puzzled by the people around me who were clearly finding it hilarious. We do have to say, most people have done this. And when it was decided that having your characters deliver a scene with no trousers on makes it... And since when was it decided that having your characters deliver a scene with no trousers on makes it inherently funny? Brian Ricks, I think, would be very proud of this. Hey, guys, don't worry about plot or dialogue here. Just take
your trousers
off and we'll all be fine.
Whoops, no pajamas, I think, was the Brian Ricks thing, wasn't it?
Is that it? And everything else. Yes. Transformers, Revenge of the Fallen at 3.
There's been a hilarious spat in the press that many people have pointed me towards, in which Megan Fox.
She really doesn't speak
No,
like
she really doesn't. But that is how she's going to speak from now on. Was quoted in the press as saying, well, I'm not going to lie about the Transformers movies. They're really not about acting, you know, but hey, that's what it is. And then Michael Bay was hit back by saying, well, that's just Megan. I mean, you know, what does Megan know about anything? And then there was a very interesting article about how it was that he first allowed her to catch his eye, which absolutely says, you know, in big bold letters, everything that I have said about him, in that he is a director with a pornographic sensibility and a leery, lecherous eye. Somebody else wrote in saying, stop saying leery, you mean leering. Is that right? What does leery mean?
Well, leery is, yeah, kind of...
That's what I thought.
It's kind of unpleasant.
Yeah, that's what I thought it meant. But apparently somebody said, you don't mean leery, you mean leering. If there are any linguists listening, please write in and correct me. Anyway, it's a horrible...
Leery is Sid James in the Carry On films.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, that's what I meant.
That's what I was thinking.
But it's a horrible and grotesque movie, but I'm quite thrilled by the fact that the people who made it are now falling out with each other. It sort of serves them right. It's like The Wages of Fear or, you know, Treasure of the Sierra Madre. It's all blowing off into the wind and they're not getting anything out of it because they are all bankrupt morally, even though they have loads of money in the bank.
Tom Seddon, aged 14. Mm. Dear Mario and Luigi, I went to see Transformers 2 last week with my friend and my twin brother for our 14th birthday. We all came out with the same opinion. The first hour was okay-ish. If a little leery.
Leery, well done, not leering.
But the hour and a half fight sequence in the desert was beyond awful.
Boring, and too boring, boring. And the amazing thing is, you think, how can a movie this loud be this dull?
Public Enemies is this week's number 2. Dear Twit and Witter, This is from Tim. Saw Public Enemies yesterday on a rare child-free day off. Mark is wrong about the HD cameras, the high-def cameras.
Sure.
People living in the 30s didn't see life in sepia. The modern camera work does a good job of bringing the period to life. The problem is not with the filming, it's with the editing. The first half of the movie is a mess, too much time wasted on random Johnny Depp montage when the movie needed some historical context, perhaps through the eyes of a third character who's not living the high life but has some vague contact with the Depression. Soundtrack also questionable. Second half was a completely different movie. Purposeful, direct and engrossing. Actors, both of them, 7 out of 10. Film, 5 out of 10.
That's a very good point. Certainly it is true that the idea... It's like, you know, if you're in the the turn of the century, do we have to watch everything in black and white? One of my favourite films is The Devils. Ken Russell always said that the people who lived in Loudun in the 17th century France did not look at it as an old city. They thought it was a new city. That's why he portrayed it in gleaming sort of white marble, also because he made it looked like a public toilet, which he wanted it to. So I agree that actually philosophically that argument doesn't hold water. But what I was attempting to say, and I clearly didn't, was I just felt that there was an aesthetic mismatch between... It's not just to do with the period setting. It's to do with the fact that the film has a nostalgic quality about its narrative that seemed to me to be out of whack with the HD. But I do agree with you about the editing. It's a very good point, and I would come close to saying I was, if not wrong, then at least open to severe criticism and misinterpretation. I've said I'm wrong a number of times now.
So you might have been wrong about Public Enemies.
No. I just on the issue of the HD camera not working for it. I mean, I don't think the HD camera does, but okay. Maybe in something to explain why it didn't. I misspoke.
Box office
or was wrong.
You misspoke. That's what politicians. That's what Bernie Eccleston says after he's done his stupid.
No, because in my defence, I was aware while saying it, and I was trying not to say that. I was trying not to say that the thing is that in the past, this everything looks like this. But there is for me a mismatch between the style. Notice how I didn't stop, even though you said enough, between the style and the narrative. And I think it's to do with the fact that the narrative is written in a nostalgic fashion.
Ice Age: Dawn of the Dinosaurs is the UK's number one.
3D is not the future; it is the past. Ice Age: Dawn of the Dinosaurs
is
proof of the fact that we have all been sold the most massive of pups, and we've all been led up the garden path by the cinema industry in an attempt to drag us back into the cinema and do something about piracy. It's nothing to do with art. It's nothing to do with artistry. It's nothing to do with immersive experience. It is to do with a cinema gimmick that we are all having to cough up for. And frankly, I've had enough.
Now, we were talking about cricket-related movie titles, and I'm going to mention these while Justine's in the room, just so that someone who might be vaguely aware about cricket, so she can react. Anyway, some of them are quite good, really. Steve, War of the Worlds. Goodwill Ponting we've had, but it's not bad. Thank you. That's Simon Mira on that one. The People versus Larry Flintoff.
Even I get that
one. This is Ted in Deal. I know how many runs you scored last summer.
That's like? Good. Mm-hmm. I like that one.
The Devil Wears Papara. That's Tom in Surrey.
No. Are you shoehorning it in?
Please tell Joan Bath to wake up and not start on the red wine just yet. This one from Jason. Forrest Stump, starring Christian Bales.
That's very good.
And I quite like this. Fear and Botham in Las Vegas. Lee. It appears to be from Lee Childs. It can't be Lee Childs, the best-selling writer, can it?
It's not Lee Childs, the singer of Imagination, who did... Body top, Buddha, ba.
Wasn't him.
Well, that was Lee somebody.
That was... Yeah, it was. It was another Lee altogether.
It was spelled with three E's. So his name was Lee. He's like McGee. He was Lee.
Hey, here's a good one from Rhodey. Rhodey Ackerman. Rosie but with a D, says Rhodey. BA honours Russian first class, MA pending 2010.
As opposed to Rhodey with a what?
I don't know. No, it's R-O-D-I-E, as in Rosie. Okay, well, I've never heard of that name before, have you?
No, you said you said, but it's Rhodey with a D.
No, Rosie with a D.
It was Lee John, by the way.
Lee John! Did that come? Was that the voice in your head told you that?
No, it was a voice on my computer.
Okay, fine.
It was telling me that.
Body top.
Lots of Lee John stories I could pass on. Dear Wesley and Buttercup, they were giving out free Marley and Me Frisbees at Liverpool Street Station this morning. What's that about? Is it an admission, says Rhodey, that cinema has gone to the dogs?
It's an admission that if somebody gave you a copy of Marley and Me, the thing you'd want to do is to throw it away.
There was a running joke at Radio 1 in the late 80s that Lee John would turn up for absolutely anything. Mm. Whatever it was you wanted, Lee John would be your man. One of the first things they asked me to do was to go, because it was Christmas, they said, we want you to go and make a documentary about Christmas in Bethlehem. So, okay, so I did that, and I did the whole Holy Land thing, and I went to the Church of the Nativity, went to the place where Christ is, you know, according to tradition, born. Was born, and who would walk down the steps?
But
it was Lee John. Hi, do you want me to contribute? No, thank you. But thanks for offering.
Straddling a piano as he went.
So, look, we got to 3:30. We haven't even talked about Bruno. So are we going to do that first?
Yes, we are.
OK, so Box Office 10 is done. A lot of the emails are done. More of your cricketing movie-based gags would be welcome. Bruno review imminent. This from John in Dubai. You were talking about Krakatoa, east of Java.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's the first film I was taken to, Krakatoa, East of Java. It was on a huge screen. I was 7. Red velvet seats, Kia Aura orange and a choc ice. We even had to dress up smart. How romantic the whole evening was.
It's like going to the theatre, wasn't it?
Simple pleasure. And then the national anthem.
That's right, yes.
At the end. Okay, so much advertised, much talked about. Bruno is out this week, Mark.
Okay, so the latest from Sacha Baron Cohen, who, of course, is the guy behind Ali G, behind Borat, and now Bruno. And one imagines that, to some extent, this particular wellspring will pretty much have run dry because of how famous Sacha Baron Cohen has become. You remember when Ali G started out, the gag was nobody knew who Sacha Baron Cohen was. So it was possible for him to dress up as this guy who was white but pretended to be black and then go and interview politicians like Tony Bennett, didn't see him coming. When he did Borat, he adopted the character of Borat, this Kazakhstani character, who, again, people didn't quite recognise because he did look very, very dissimilar. So a number of people were involved in Borat, the movie, who didn't know they were being involved in a spoof. Notably, there's that scene in which he goes to a New York dinner party and speaks to some feminists who he doesn't understand at all. He got very, very upset about the fact that he had spoofed them. Now, Bruno, which I think is probably the last time that he can get away from it, because I think it is now everyone kind of knows who Sacha Baron Cohen is. And already there is evidence in Bruno that they were struggling to find people who didn't understand the gag. So the Bruno character you may have seen before, and I'm sure you all know this because there have been buses going up and down the high street with it written all over and blah, 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 blah. But the story is, so he's a gay Austrian fashionista who runs a TV show called The Funky Zeit with Mit Bruno. And he's fired after going to a fashion show wearing a suit made entirely out of Velcro, which of course sticks to everything and causes furniture to fall over. And he knocks things off the catwalk and therefore is fired. And that's done in one of those sort of faux documentary fashions that sort of suggests that somehow Sacha Baron Cohen turned up, hijacked the event. You know, just before Bruno opened, there was the famous stunt about him being lowered down at the MTV Awards onto a waiting Eminem, who then stormed out. But then it was said, actually, the whole thing was a setup. Yep. So there is all the way through, Bruno, the question of how much is anybody in on the gag, okay? So anyway, so he's fired from the thing. He decides that fashion is hollow. He decides that he's going to go to Hollywood and become famous. And in the manner of the Sacha Baron Cohen comic characters, the way in which he becomes famous is essentially to sort of puncture the rich and famous. So he thinks, oh, I know, I'll adopt an African baby. I will find some cause that's going to make me famous. I will do all this sort of charity work that makes other people famous, and I will go to the Middle East, which he refers to as Middle Earth, to solve their problem. You see, that got a laugh out of you.
I know, I was smiling.
To solve their problems, unfortunately, he doesn't understand the difference between Hamas and hummus. Here's a clip.
Why are you so anti-Hamas? I mean, isn't pita bread the real enemy?
You're confusing Hamas with hummus, I believe. Hummus
do you,
has
do you
nothing
think
to
there
do with
is
Hamas.
A relation between Hamas and hummus?
So was the founder of Hamas a chef? He had created the food and then got lots of followers?
Hummus has nothing to do with Hamas. It's a food, okay? We eat it, they eat it.
It's vegetarian, it's healthy, it's beans.
So the first thing to say is, you
laughing.
See, yeah, exactly. And
that's
and,
funny. It's a good joke.
No, it is a good joke, and there are certainly some good jokes in Bruno. There's a thing when he's trying to look for a crisis to attach himself to, and he says, famously, everyone's quoted this. He said, "We've had Darfur, and I want to know where Dar 5 is." And yep. So there are things in it that are, you know, solid comedy. There are other, you know, bits in it which he goes to a Hollywood, a medium to contact the spirit of Milli Untervanilli, and there's a scene which then plays out which is, you know, rampagingly explicit, and you know it is funny in as much as it's so embarrassing because you can't really believe somebody's actually doing this, in front of you on screen. And it's worth saying, incidentally, that the movie has an 18 certificate. You have to work quite hard to get an 18 certificate now, but the BBFC have classified it 18 for strong sex and sex references. And there is clearly a side to Sacha Baron Cohen which is very, very, exhibitionist. He's somebody who does like making.
You reckon?
No, but. Obviously, but you know, in a sort of fairly kind of rampaging way. And there are things about Bruno that are funny. My issues with it are as follows. Firstly, I have to say that the issues around the is it pro or anti-gay thing, I think, is a complete red herring. I think that when people were saying, oh, well, he needs to come out and say that he's pro-gay rights or anti-gay rights, no. You don't need to do that. You don't need to. We do not have to have the edges taken off things and everything made politically correct. I mean, it is fairly apparent, if there is a thesis to the movie, what it is. Let the movie speak for itself. If you don't think the movie speaks for itself, fine. I spoke to somebody, a friend of mine, saying, is it what is that? What is there a general feeling within the gay community? Are they pro it or anti it? Because you read one person says, and he says, well, the general feeling is none of us care. We've seen it all before. Are we interested? And that is actually what he said was, if we have Graham Norton, why do we need Bruno? And there was a point to that. The second thing is that once you take out the element of this being completely a joke sprung upon people that don't know they're being involved in it, on one hand, it takes away a problem which I had with Borat, because I think that there are soft targets that Sacha Baron Cohen goes for that I think don't really serve much point. And I think there is a certain smugness in some of what he does in his soft targets. So frankly, the more people are in on the joke, the more comfortable I feel about it. Although that one of the problems with Bruno is that it tries to suggest that it's all being done completely on the lam. And I think there is a suggestion that some of the scenes that are looking like they're meant not to be set up do look too set up. And even if they aren't set up, the fact that they look set up is a problem. The other thing was, I had the same experience that I had before with Borat, of sitting in a room with people who were in gales of laughter about the more outre humour. And none of that was as funny for me as it was for them. I think it is funnier than Borat. It's shorter than Borat. And I think that there are jokes in it that are superior to the jokes in Borat. I don't think that it's any form of comic masterpiece. And I think it is definitely the bottom of the well as far as doing this sort of thing again is concerned. Plus, there are some major problems that, most notably, the fact that in the wake of the death of Michael Jackson, they took out the LaToya Jackson scene because it was considered to be in bad taste. I mean, the BBFC report that the movie was submitted to them twice, most recently classified on the 17th of June, and then reclassified on the 3rd of April after it was resubmitted, with presumably that's when that scene came out. And my feeling about it is this. I don't see why you can't have equal opportunities offensiveness. I don't see why it's okay to offend some people but not okay to offend Michael Jackson fans. I mean, that bothers me. As just a simple piece of comedy, did it make me laugh enough to say it's a decent comedy? Well, I laughed six times.
That's pretty good.
So that's fine. So I laughed six times. So it did do what it says on the tin. And in Borat, I didn't laugh six times. It doesn't bother me about the political issues, because I think everybody's free to make up their own mind what the political issues are. You know, I don't actually think in the end that, in fact, it has a clear political agenda. I think an awful lot of it is throwing an awful lot of stuff at the wall and seeing what sticks. I think he won't be able to do this again. And I still think that underlying it all is a degree of smugness that I'm not entirely comfortable with.
When was the last 18 certificate comedy? Can you remember one?
Well,
I mean, I'm just interested only because you can get so much through on a 15.
Yes.
Does it deserve the 18 certificate?
Yeah, it did. I mean, it was clearly 18, because there's an awful lot of very explicit stuff in it. I mean, very explicit. Okay, I mean, very explicit.
Because a colleague said to me the other day, they were going to a screening of the film, and there was a woman from Universal there.
Yeah.
And this guy had tried to take his 15, 16-year-old kids. And the woman said, no, absolutely. It's an 18. And this woman from Universal said, actually, it should be a 21.
Yeah, no, I mean, it is. It is very rude. And I mean, I have a problem with it being very rude, but it is very, very crude. And there are, I mean, obviously, one of the things that he tries to do with his comedy is to keep stepping over the line and see how far he can get away with it. And the answer is he can get quite a long way with it. Apparently, in America, it was submitted to the MPAA. It was given an NC-17, then was recut for R. I'm not sure what the version we've got is. Certainly, the version that I saw was, you know, pretty much as lewd as anything you'd see in the cinema. But in the end, all those things don't matter. The only thing that really matters is it funny? And for me, the answer to that is, it's passingly funny. And, it, you know, six laughs. Two
this
of which,
counts
which,
as two, quite a good review,
two
I think.
Of which, yeah, two of which were chuckles. I didn't hate it. I did not hate it. I can't get excited about it. And I can't pretend that I sat there and enjoyed it like everyone else did, because I didn't. I simply didn't. I sat there and the room was, you know, booming with laughter. And I had that strange feeling again that I had in Borat, although not quite the same, because in Borat I just didn't find it funny at all. That strange feeling of I've arrived here, and it's like there's a very famous science fiction story in which a space alien comes down to Earth, and they explain science to him, they explain math, they explain reproduction, they explain everything. The thing they can't explain to him is humor. And I was actually at one point thinking, have I got a humor problem? Am I the humorless person that everyone tells me I am? But then I went home and I watched Love and Death and I just laughed like a drain. So the answer is no.
We stand corrected here from Andy in Maidstone.
John.
Our grammar is now better.
Leery,
yeah. Suspicious and distrustful.
There we go.
Leering, well, ogling, I mean, and ogling. Lusting.
So I mean leering, not leery.
Yes. So Sid James
was leering.
Was leering and okay. Not being leery.
No, good. And can I just say, because one other thing I wanted to say about Bruno would be very quick, which was, that's what I think of the film. As far as the issues around the film is concerned, I'm really annoyed about the way that the reviews were embargoed when some reviews had already appeared. I think the whole issue of saying we're not going to say whether it's pro or anti-gay and then sort of doing that is completely skew-if. And I think that cutting the LaToya Jackson scene shows a great lack of bottle. And I think any film that ends up with Bono and Chris Martin and Elton John all in on the gag has effectively gone through the sellout door, which is a different issue to whether the film's funny.
And I should say, by the way, a number of people are very upset about what I said about Dumbledore in the next Harry Potter film, for which I apologise if it has spoilt your enjoyment. However, I would personally guarantee that every single person that goes in to see the Harry Potter film knows what happens to Dumbledore. If you go through, if you're paying to go and see Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, overwhelmingly, everyone in that city, if you said, hands up who knows what happens to Dumbledore, they will know. So yeah. Anyway, I apologise if you didn't.
And if you missed it before, it's he's a girl.
And a fish.
Yes.
At the same time. So we need to do a couple more movies.
Yeah, can I rattle through a couple of things? Yes. Is that all right? Just because I don't want to lose this out. There's a film called Soul Power, which is the story of the music concert that accompanied the Rumble in the Jungle in Zaire in 1974. And they got all these artists together. Originally, they were all meant to be
in
part
Zaire,
of the same
in
event.
In Zaire.
That's exactly right. Who did that song?
Johnny Wakelin?
I don't know. You're the former Radio 1 DJ, not me. Anyway, if you remember When We Were Kings, which was the story of the fight itself, this is made from the other footage of the concert, which ended up being separated off due to sort of complicated, scheduling problems. And some of it's shot by people like Albert Maysles, who is a great director as well. Of course, he was involved in Gimme Shelter, and it involves performances by James Brown and Bill Withers and Miriam McCabe and The Spinners. And I watched it yesterday, and I thought it was really terrific. I mean, it's amazing how good the footage is. This footage has been unseen essentially since the mid-1970s. It's a really good concert film, but it's also a really good film about, you know, the cultural movement surrounding the whole, taking these acts, taking them to Zaire. It's a very, very interesting piece of work. I'm very surprised it hasn't been put together like this before, because it's very well worth seeing. On a more mainstream front, there is this thing, The Lives of Pippa Lee, which is written and directed by Rebecca Miller from her own book. And I think Brad Pitt may have executive produced it. And Robin Penwright is a woman who, at the beginning of the film, we see her moving with Alan Arkin to a retirement home. And we think that she's Alan Arkin's daughter, but it turns out she's not. She's Alan Arkin's wife, second wife. And as they live in this retirement home, things start to unspool for them, partly because he is drifting apparently into senility, but also because she has dark secrets in her past. Here's a clip.
Heard what happened to us. We used to laugh so much.
Can't laugh all the time.
Well, we have to laugh.
Or what?
Or she died for nothing.
Not that again, okay?
Why am I not allowed to mention her?
I will not let this marriage turn into a guilt fest. We have been through this 100 times. She was crazy. You get involved with somebody like that, it's like putting your hand in a blender. Sooner or later, your fingers get bloody.
I just can't take it. I can't take it. I keep seeing her, Herb. I keep seeing her. I keep seeing the past. The past just keeps caving in.
Maybe you should be taking antidepressants.
What?
You all right? You want to talk?
My mother used to do this.
She'd suddenly disappear and I'd find her on the bed in front of the TV with a plate of toast on her.
Which pretty much gives you the sense of what kind of... there's a lot of navel-gazing, there's a lot of looking inside, and then she flashes back to her past. And then hope sort of arrives in the shape of Keanu Reeves, and there's a marvellous moment in it. There's a moment in this film in which somebody actually says about Alan Arkin, I like him because he's avuncular. And it is like Alan Arkin, if you cut him in half, he'd be like a stick of rock, he'd have the word avuncular written all the way through it.
That's where we get uncle from.
I know. Yeah. But surely avuncular, or is, don't we get avuncular from uncle? I think we get avuncular from uncle rather than the other way around.
Yeah, avuncular meaning in the style of an uncle.
In the style of an uncle. You're probably right. Yeah, exactly. There, she gets into this car with Keanu Reeves.
What's the equivalent of aunt? There must be a word for
it. Avuncular. Yeah, that sounds like Avada Kedavra. So, and let's not even go there because we've already annoyed the nation doing that. So, there's a bit when she gets into the car with Keanu Reeves, right? Who is this sort of strafey-like character who has turned up and he's obviously going to offer some form of escape for her. And there's a brilliant moment when, because there's Robin Penwright, who's a really, really good... Robin Penwright? Robin Wright Penn? Which way round is she doing it now? I think she's doing Robin Wright Penn, isn't she, as opposed to Robin Penwright? Because she was Robin Wright and then she married Sean Penn.
Robin Penwright in the afternoon.
Robin Wright Penn, I think that's right. Anyway, and so she says to Keanu Reeves, she suddenly says, I've suddenly figured out what it is that's wrong with you. And he says, huh? And she says, you can't. And there's a pause and the audience goes, act. And she says, tell a lie. And it is one of those absolutely, you know, face slapping performances by Keanu Reeves in which he literally looks like he's walked into a door jam and he's spending the whole movie just sort of slightly stunned. And it's not a terrible film because Robin Wright Penn Wright Penn Penn Wright Penn Wright her is a very, very fine actress. I mean, I still think she was great in Forrest Gump, and she's good, and she brings some kind of emotional weight to it. And Julianne Moore's in it as her aunt's lesbian friend from back in the past, and she's kind of quite interesting. But overall, it's a kind of chocolate pudding of a movie. It's sort of, you know, it's a bit of a melange. It sort of wanders around, and of a Wednesday afternoon, 3 o'clock, you go, oh, it's, you know, there are some quite interesting little bits in it, and Alan Arkin does the Alan Arkin stuff. He's gruff, he's difficult, and yet he's avuncular, but that is the performance that he is now being knocked down into, and I wish he would do something else. Overall, you couldn't argue that it's a great film, but it has a couple of good performances in it, even though it is essentially about people who are quite annoying, sort of literate. I mean, actually, the whole cast, in the end, occupies a sort of area which would normally be the people in the background in a Woody Allen film. You know, they'd go away for a weekend and they'd go to a beach house, and these are the people that would be in the beach house. And that's not a great recommendation. However, it is a bazillion miles better than this week's bawdy kids offering, which is Fired Up. Here's the plot of Fired Up, right? Two randy jocks decide to join up a cheerleading camp.
When you say jocks, this is in the American sense.
College jocks. I mean, actually, I think the people who are acting them are about 42.
Right.
But as is now traditional with, you know, American teen movies, anyone under 50 is an American teenager.
See Dangerous Minds for proof.
Dangerous. Oh, yeah. I know. Dangerous. They are in Dangerous Minds, they're really old.
Class
they're
for the 30
really,
year old.
Really old. I mean, as they are in, you know, many of those school movies. But in this, it's a particular problem. And so they decide to go to a camp rather than going to jock camp. They go to cheerleader camp because there'll be more chicks, right? That's the plot. That's the whole film. And then, of course, there's that caveat that these, you know, stupid... And this has got a 12A certificate. I think it went backwards and forwards a little bit in order to get... It was cut down in America, but it's got a 12A here for moderate sex references and language. I think, well, you know, I think that's being kind to what its problems are. But there is the caveat, of course, that they learn during the course of the movie that, in fact, there is more to life than this stuff. And yet it's in that deeply duplicitous way. You know, there was like used to be a genre of movies ages and ages called nudie cutie movies in which basically you'd get a lot of nudity, but somebody would stand up at the beginning with a clipboard and say, oh, it's a human body. It's very interesting. It's a scientific movie. Here shall we see the ways in which a human body can be interesting.
Heinz Wolf was in all of
them. Exactly. Heinz Wolf was in all of them. Or you look back to things like The Blob. You know, the 1950s movie, The Blob. It was financed by church groups. Because the guy who made it managed to convince the church groups that it was a morality story. There was evil, but good won. And they went, okay, fine. But what that actually meant was they ended up financing a big, globby monster movie in which a bunch of globby stuff happened. But at the end, good wins out. Well, Fired Up is that stupid, you know, incredibly dumbo, jock-type American comedy, which I can't stand. But of course, in order to do it, they just have to go to the end. Oh yeah, actually, the boys learn that there, you know, there is more to it than just that, and you know, women aren't just, you know, they're not just objects. You know, actually, in a way, I'd feel happier if these movies would just had the strength of their conviction and just said, look, we are deeply chauvinistic grot for kids, and just left it at that, because at least you'd know where you were.
Uncle comes from the Latin word avunculus, which means maternal uncle.
Oh, well, there we go.
But there is a word which...
How can uncle come from a word that means a maternal uncle?
Mother's brother.
Well, it can't mean maternal
avunculus. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Movie of the week is...
Isn't that a monster? Is that a homunculus?
Movie of the week. There isn't one.
No, well, actually, funnily enough, the movie of the week, it's probably Bruno.
A surprise to everybody,
yeah.
I think. Now, next week, it's the Open Golf, but we're hoping that movies will be on at the same time. So what you need to do is to be working out the film titles with golfing references, because hopefully we'll do as many as we can on next week's programme.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.